Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. And we're recording this. It is almost 9 o'clock at night at Marty's vet clinic, where she has maybe a C-section to do here in a little bit. So welcome to our world, y'all. We are happy you're here. And we have a topic that it's a little bit of a challenging topic. And I brought it to Marty because a gal who owns a dog that was sired by one of my stud dogs just went through this with hers. And I thought, geez, what a terrible thing. And I wanted to get more information. And I think if I want more information, then everybody wants more information. So, Marty, we're going to talk today about encephalitis and meningitis and other assorted brain, spinal cord inflammation, scary stuff. Is that
what you're doing? Yeah. And it is scary. And it's scary because the dogs get really sick. And it's scary because it's a very difficult diagnosis to make. It usually requires some advanced imaging, some advanced testing. It's not an easy diagnosis to nail down. And it's not an easy treatment to develop.
And so I just want to emphasize that this is a broad group of diseases, most of which are not contagious, are contagious.
Well, there are infectious causes. There are viral causes. There are bacterial causes.
Right.
There are parasitic causes. But there's also some that are just immune mediated. And so it may not necessarily be related to an infection or it's inflammation. So that's the important thing, is that there's a difference between inflammation and infection. So just because you're running a fever, just because you have inflammation, doesn't mean you have an infection. An infection is a decent diagnosis to make, because at least you can reach for a drug like an antibiotic, an antifungal, an antiviral, and an antiparasiticide. But if it's not, then all you can reach for is anti-inflammatories.
Wow. Okay. So let's start at the top. What are we going to see? What's my dog going to be doing? And you said earlier that this is something that really you don't necessarily see in cats.
I don't think I've ever seen one in a cat, but we also don't see it particularly often in dogs. So It's not common. It can start off with a fever, just not feeling well, lethargic, depression, maybe vomiting and diarrhea, because dogs have vomiting and diarrhea with everything, loss of appetite. Anytime they run a fever, they usually stop eating. And, you know, appetite is one of the biggest things that we as pet owners identify as, well, if he's still eating, he's probably okay. I mean, people are like, yeah, you know, she's going to eat during every kind of illness. If she's really that sick, man, we're in trouble. You can have them have seizures. They can be depressed, like not clinically depressed, but physically depressed. They can look blind. They can have deficits of the cranial lameness. They can have stumbling. They can have evidence of vestibular syndrome, which is where they tilt their head. You can see all kinds of symptoms that relate to that, but there's not this encephalitis test that you can go in and have done at the vet clinic. And this is often going to mean a referral to a referral center, to a neurologist, to somebody that can do advanced imaging and that can do advanced testing. Because if you decide that you need a CSF tap, so you anesthetize the dog, you do an MRI, you do a CSF tap, you do all those things at one visit, the CSF tap has to be read within hours. So it's not something that can be sent to the diagnostic lab, because you're checking for white blood cells and protein levels and all kinds of things in the cerebral spinal fluid that change very quickly. That's a very fragile fluid. So this is not something that's easy to diagnose. And the biggest problem is that if you think it's infectious, you shouldn't use an anti-inflammatory like a steroid. And if you think it's immune mediated, then you need to use an anti-inflammatory, which is a steroid, dexamethasone or prednisone or one of those. And then you run the risk of making the wrong decision. That's always the discussion when we walk into the exam room with a client. We say, well, if it's autoimmune, we need dexamethasone or prednisone. If it's infectious and we give those drugs and we suppress the immune system, we could make this blow up and it could get magnificently worse in a very short time period. So this is the tough conversation that veterinarians have to have with clients. Are we going to just like close our eyes and throw steroids at it and hope for the best? Or do we cover it with antibiotics at the same time? What do we do here? Because these are not easy. And we all know that the limitation on the referral centers right now is pretty significant.
Yeah.
Finding a neurologist that can get you in on Saturday at midnight. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good luck.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a, as you mentioned, an uncommon occurrence. It's not liable to be the case, but when it happens, it's bad and it's scary.
Yep. And it can be fatal and it can be very difficult decision-making. So yeah, because mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to throw every drug at them. You're not going to throw an antifungal and an antibiotic and an antiviral and an anti-inflammatory. I mean, you're going to have to pick what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And so some of it's, this is where the art and the science come together, is what is the art of treating this? You know, you can have a puppy, a young dog that has discospondylitis. You can have a young dog with immune-mediated meningitis, and they can look very much the same. They can be painful. They can look really hangdog. They can look really sick. They're running a fever. If it's discospondylitis, you need to use an antibiotic. If it's immune-mediated, then you don't need an antibiotic, but you might use an antibiotic just to cover yourself because of the immune suppressant effect of using a steroid. And typically the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like Medicam and Rimadyl and some of the other drugs in that class aren't going to fix immune-mediated disease.
And so if you have a dog that you suspect one of these sorts of more esoteric, if you will, right, kind of off the wall, strange, weird and wonderful, Auntie Laura's medical mystery tour, the kind of thing that happens to me.
Again, yeah.
And it's, you're at your regular vet clinic. What are you doing not at a referral center? What can you do? What tests can you pull to make a decision about
right.
what you think it might be and what treatment options you should choose?
Right. Well, there's always going to be the physical exam finding. You're going to probably do just the basic blood work, the CBC and the chemistry panel, looking for any evidence of a high white blood cell count. The chemistry panel, which probably isn't going to tell you a lot because it typically doesn't involve a lot of organ function. They may do a culture. But like I said, a CSF tap, that's not something your regular vet is going to do and be able to analyze in office in most cases. X-rays, usually not very helpful because this isn't going to show up on an X-ray. So you're talking MRI, you're talking CSF taps. If you're doing serology, if you're looking for the fever of undetermined origin, and there's a great panel that some of the diagnostic labs run that tests for 12 or 13 different infectious diseases, mm-hmm. those are wonderful panels, but they take 4 to 7 days to get back. And that's if it doesn't happen on the weekend. So if this happens Saturday afternoon and you don't have another pickup for the lab until Monday, now you're talking a whole maybe 10 days until you can get those results back. And this dog may not have 10 days left in him
right.
during the time period that you're trying to get some answers on what you should do diagnostically. Sometimes the diagnosis is made on the response to treatment, and that's not the ideal situation, but it may be your only choice. If you live in the boonies, if you can't get into a neurologist, if you don't have the money to afford a neurologist, and if you don't, you know, we understand that as veterinarians, not everybody has all the resources to do everything, but sometimes you have to just say, okay, we're going to use a pretty hefty antibiotic, and we're going to do a pretty hefty anti-inflammatory dose. And that may be Pred, that may be Atopica, which is cyclosporin, it may be azathioprine, it may be one of those immunosuppressive drugs. And you're going to like pray like mad and hope like hell that you're making the right decisions. And sometimes you don't, simply because you don't have the ability to get the information you need at all or quickly enough to make those decisions, because you don't have 10 days. I mean, you literally may not have 10 days to get this figured out.
This dog that I am talking about that was sort of our serovar for this particular episode, I think it was 5 days, maybe.
Yeah.
3 to 5 days between when he started having problems and when she had to put him down. So I guess we back up a little bit. Your dog is lame. It's maybe it's having seizures, maybe it's, you know, hanging head, and you run through all the things, right? And there's no cervical disc disease, and there's no obvious spondylosis things or arthritis things or any of those kind of things. Is that the point at which you're like, okay, so we're now out of the obvious and we have to move on to the zebra in the room, if you will?
Correct. And so just to define what that term is, when you hear hoofbeats, you're told to look for horses, not for zebras.
Right.
So the horses are going to be the things that are most common, and those zebras are those really off the wall, unusual, rare things that happen. So yes, this is a zebra, but disco spondylitis is not quite such a zebra, and that will show up pretty well on an x-ray. I had one client that almost had it missed at a referral center because they didn't x-ray the entire length of the spine. They x-rayed down to the dog's pelvis, missed the last couple of vertebrae. And by the time I saw the dog back, because we'd sent him to see somebody and they missed a couple of vertebrae, by the time I saw the dog back, the dog was almost not walking and only could lift himself up and down because he was a very muscular boxer and could manage to get himself up and down just based on his forelegs and his chest, his strength on the front end. So if you are taking x-rays, make sure they take all of the spine, you know, don't miss any part of it. X-ray in the skull, you're not going to see anything because this doesn't show up, but disco spondylitis will show up. But, you know, ask for the basic diagnostic, the CBC chemistry, urinalysis, x-rays, the basic stuff. Sometimes chest x-rays will show something that's going on. So make sure you ask for those things. And if you're not getting it, then you're going to have a really serious heart-to-heart talk with a veterinarian. And if you feel like getting a second opinion is appropriate, it shouldn't offend your veterinarian if they can't get you a good solid answer. And these are hard. So please don't think that you're dishing your veterinarian and saying, well, you haven't figured this out. Because these are really difficult to figure out and they're very difficult to try to manage. Sometimes a second opinion will just be that you came out of the tunnel vision and you started to look at the big picture and you went, well, here we go. And the rule of thumb in human medicine and in veterinary medicine is never let them die without the silver bullet. And the silver bullet is steroids. So sometimes when all else fails and you've tried antibiotics and all the other stuff, sometimes you close your eyes, you take a deep breath, you throw them on a heavy dose of steroids, and you pray that you're making the right decision. And so I'm not going to say that that's an easy decision. I'm not going to say one that I make that easily or frequently, but sometimes that's all you can do. Once you have exhausted antibiotics, all the diagnostics that you can get access to, and that makes sense. So sometimes that's what you have to do, but please don't forget Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and Ehrlichia, and some of the other tick-borne diseases are frequently causes of this. So doxycycline, we use a lot of doxycycline in our practice and a lot of other practices.
Sure. Yeah,
right. But, you know, the upper Midwest, the East Coast, there are definitely pockets of Lyme disease and the other tick-borne diseases. So if you're in an area with tick-borne diseases, number one, use tick preventives. Please use tick preventives. I can't tell you how many cases a week we diagnose with Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and Ehrlichia. I mean, I can't even count them on one hand a week. For me, not just me, but all my doctors, all of us together, it's dozens of cases. So use your tick control. So that's one more thing to have off the list and to not have to worry about.
Hey guys, it's Laura. If you have a small dog that uses potty pads, you know how much of a hassle it can be. I get it. Dirty pads, lingering odors, constant cleanup. It's just not fun. That's why I love Brilliant Pad Smart. This automatic self-cleaning potty system uses poop AI technology to sense waste and advance clean pads, so your dog always has a fresh place to go potty without you having to lift a finger. It's amazing. And with the Brilliant Pad app, you can check in anytime to see if your dog has gone potty, so you don't have to wonder or worry when you're away. Whether you're at work, traveling, or just busy, your puppy still gets 24/7 access to a clean potty area. So say goodbye to smelly, soggy pads and hello to a cleaner, easier potty solution. Visit brilliantpad.com/MartyLaura and use BPB-MartyLaura50 to save $25 on your Brilliant Pad Smart today.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
So you told me this earlier, and so I'm going to make sure that I get it right. Encephalitis is inflammation of the brain, and meningitis is inflammation of the spinal cord.
It's the saran wrap that goes around the brain and the spinal cord. So the brain and the spinal cord are basically surrounded by a tough tissue layer. And then in between the brain and the spinal cord and the rest of the body is this little cushion of fluid. So that's the cerebral spinal fluid. Okay. And so that's where you can pick up the inflammatory changes. So meningia are the saran wrap around the brain. And then the dura mater is the saran wrap around the spinal cord. Dura mater means tough mother. So I'm not sure who named her that, but the stuff that covers your spinal cord is your tough mother.
You know, I mean, even in a pretty grim topic, we can find something funny. I like that.
Is a tough topic. If it happens to your dog, God bless you. I mean, I feel bad for you, but mm-hmm. you're going to have very difficult decisions, and you need to have a veterinary team that you trust to have good, sincere conversations about what's best. This is where you may want to have insurance. You may want to have care credit.
I was just
going to
say, this is an argument for pet insurance right here.
Yep. You want to have care credit so that you've got the resources, even if you don't have the money in your checking account right now that spreads out the payments, or vet billing or scratch pay or one of the other options that you have. So these are the things that you need to plan for, the catastrophic things that can happen, because if you want to spend the money, you have to have a way to make that happen, whether it's insurance or whether it's the alternatives. So
yeah, pet insurance, obviously I'm a big fan. Pet insurance is a thing, but definitely this is a hard one to make these kind of decisions. And what is the, assume you get the treatment right, what's your prognosis?
If you get the treatment right, it usually works. These guys typically will make a pretty good recovery, but if you get the treatment wrong, then it won't. And it depends on what that means. Was it a parasite? Was it a bacterial infection? Was it a virus? I mean, we can see these post-vaccination. We can see West Nile virus. We can see Eastern equine encephalitis in dogs. I mean, there's definitely some things here. And we don't typically think of antivirals as being one of the first things that we reach for. We don't have a lot of good antivirals. We don't have a lot of good antifungals for this stuff.
And so you said something earlier that was really sort of sobering, that often you don't know the cause of this particular inflammation and that you don't get a really exact diagnosis unless you do a necropsy.
Right. And that's a horrible way to have a diagnosis, better to have a diagnosis than not to. Mm-hmm. And this is the reason that we don't want to expose our dogs to raw meat diets, and we don't want to expose our dogs to parasites that they're not protected from. And, mm-hmm. you know, so think about all the stuff that's in your dog's world. And young dogs in particular will have these issues. They'll have some immune-mediated disorders, or they'll be more susceptible to some of these diseases. They're a little weird when they happen.
Yeah, definitely weird. And so talk to me about the immune-mediated, because I think that that is something that's worth talking about in terms of, is this something that the dog's system just, like you said, couldn't manage the whatever, mm-hmm. whether it's an infection from a tick-borne disease or a virus or a fungal or what have you, that the body just couldn't fight it off.
Right. Or it's just an immune-mediated disease because they didn't have a trigger. Their immune system just decided that that part of their body wasn't theirs, whether it's immune-mediated thrombocytopenia or autoimmune hemolytic anemia or polyarthritis. But there is a steroid-responsive sterile meningitis or arteritis. So we can see those, and that's usually in young dogs. So it's kind of interesting that we'll see that. Young is under about a year. Mm. And then all the other stuff that nobody can figure out, they just call it meningitis or meningoencephalitis of unknown origin, which is a garbage can diagnosis for we couldn't figure out what it was, but there was something. And it's frustrating for you. It's frustrating for your veterinary team. It's not like veterinarians like to say, well, we don't really know. I mean, that's why we have this fever of undetermined origin panel that can be run at IDEXX for 13 tests. You know, it tests for all these bizarre, weird things that you typically aren't going to be able to test for at the veterinary clinic. It's going to pick up the blastomycosis and all these other things. And again, you know, if you've got blasto, you put the dog on steroids, that's called a blossom test, because you let the blasto blow up and then these dogs, they can die very quickly. So this is the fine line, the art of medicine, the art versus the science of, okay, which line do we go down, where we cross, and we cross into the right or the wrong decision. So you have to know that when you're making these decisions with your veterinarian, that you and they are probably making decisions mutually, knowing the benefits and the risks of what you're doing. If you can't get into a neurologist, you can't afford it, they don't have a capacity, whatever it is, you may have to really align carefully, but make sure it's someone that you trust. So this is why you want to have a vet clinic that has more than one doctor. Sometimes in our practice, we've got seven doctors. I'll walk out of the exam room and go, oh my God, like, I don't even know what this is. So, you know.
No, Marty, I don't think that's ever happened. So good luck with that.
No, it happened on Saturday, actually. It does. It does happen.
Okay, I want to know what stumped Marty. Now I'm dying. I'm sorry, this is a segue, but I really need to know what stumped Marty.
Okay, it was a three-year-old Pomeranian cross that came into the practice on Saturday afternoon with a very nice older lady and her neighbor, because her husband was in the hospital, and the dog was ataxic. It was stumbling, it was falling asleep, it couldn't walk straight. And I looked at this dog and I went over her over and over and over, and I said, okay, what else has happened? You know, when did this start? She said, well, sometime between 8 and noon today, the dog vomited. I was gone from home. She was fine at 8. She wasn't fine at noon. I took her out for a walk this morning, and now she's urinating a lot, and she's vomited, and she's like falling asleep on the exam table and crossing her legs over. And so I looked at her and I thought, okay, this looks like a toxicity. Yeah. So I went out and I got Dan, Dr. Griffiths, and I said, come in here and take a look at this dog. And he went over her because he does chiropractic and all that stuff. And he's like, well, it's not pain. It's not this. It's not that. He says, you think it's a toxicity? And we'd gone over xylitol. We'd gone over antifreeze. And you look at this very lovely lady and you say, marijuana? Is there any possibility of marijuana? And she says, absolutely not. And I'm like, okay, I believe you. And the neighbor goes, we live down the street from a school.
Of course.
Bingo. Got it.
That's what I would say.
And unlike the Quincy show that we all used to watch on TV, there is no tox screen and there is no universal antidote. No. You can't just say, well, I'm going to run a tox screen and here's the drug that we're going to use to treat this. So we basically gave her supportive care, and I pulled out the charcoal and I pulled out the fluids and I pulled out the Serenia. And charcoal, if you don't know what charcoal is, it truly is charcoal, and you give it to the dog so that it slows the absorption of other possible things that they could absorb of their GI tract. And it is as black as you could possibly imagine. We got it on me. We got it on the dog. We got it on the wall. We got it on the technician. You know, charcoal is not a fun drug to have to give. So we gave it to her, and
Pomeranian.
I called her. Yeah, white dog. Called her on Easter morning because she was a Pomeranian cross. So she was white with red spots. Called her on Easter morning. She didn't answer her phone. Called her on the day after Easter, and she said, oh, she's great. I'm like, oh, thank God. So she picked up something when she was on the walk that morning. She saw her do it. And by the time she, you know, the faster you run toward the dog to take something out of their mouth,
the faster they swallow.
Man. And so I am still sure that it had to have been a joint, marijuana, a gummy, something. And of course,
somebody
we'll
could drop
know.
A gummy and not even know it.
Or they toss a cigarette butt or whatever, you know. Right. So people are not careful, and sometimes people think it's funny. And so, unfortunately, sometimes our dogs take the brunt of the joke. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those little tests that you can get from the dollar store for marijuana, they don't work on dogs effectively. But dogs do tend to urinate a lot more when they are suffering from a marijuana toxicity. And she had urinated quite a few times. So it all kind of fit together. And she responded well to treatment. But it was this conversation with a woman I'd never met before, this very nice lady and her neighbor. And I'm looking at this lady because she wasn't a regular client. And she looks at me and she says, do you think, you don't think she's You don't think she's gonna, I said, die? And she said, yeah. I said, no, I don't think she's gonna die, but I think she's gonna feel really horrible for a little while yet. And indeed, we were lucky on that. Mm. But mm. that is the hardest question for a client to ask, yeah. is do you think she's going to die? Do you think she needs to be euthanized? Those are very, very hard topics to broach.
We've talked about them here on the show.
We have, and we have. So refer
we've
back.
We talked about seizures, and we talked about things. And so this was sort of like I say, a topic that popped up, and I really wanted to have Marty's insight on it. And, you know, I think that it's important as much as anything to understand that there are things that we just can't know. You know, dogs can't tell us.
No, and you don't have unlimited resources. You know, if you go to the hospital and you don't have money, they're going to take care of you. Unfortunately, we don't have a service, a system in the veterinary community that supports all of this stuff, and we don't have the capacity sometimes. So even if you said, I have a big credit limit on my care credit, I would like to see a neurologist. If the neurologist or the whoever, the orthopedic surgeon or, you know, whoever it happens to be can't get you in, we're stuck with what we've got. So you have to rely on your veterinary clinic in your community and always remember that they want the best for you, but be nice to them because not everybody is nice to their veterinarian and they don't appreciate having someone snarky to their front desk staff and to their exam room staff. So when you call the vet clinic, be nice. If they say, what can I give for a message? Tell them, don't say, well, I'm not going to talk to you. I'm only going to talk to the vet. Well, that's the gatekeeper to get to the vet. So be nice to the staff. Start at the front desk. Don't start just being nice to the veterinarian. Start with everybody all the way through. I am sitting here looking at my table right now. I have this giant box, and I mean giant box.
That is a huge box.
This is a huge box of Cheryl's cookies.
Oh,
there's also a carrot cake, some Packer cupcakes, and a giant tray of cookies on my table right now. And these are all from clients that brought them this week, not even the week.
Okay, you guys are going to have to watch the YouTube just to see Marty's vet clinic waiting room and all of the food. I hear it because, of course, my friend Krista works at a clinic and I'm like, do you want dinner? She's like, no, we had blah, 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 blah. And that is, I think, an important thing. And particularly when you're talking about something like this, that's a, as you say, a zebra diagnosis, a difficult diagnosis. You know, it's scary and it's heartbreaking.
It is.
And you don't know what's going on and you don't know why your dog is sick and the vet doesn't know. And so that leaves people sometimes to not have confidence. And I think the important thing I want to convey, you know, from this is that it just is a thing. And it doesn't mean you should lack confidence in your veterinarian. It's just simply that there are some things that happen to our dogs and our pets that are just really hard to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, be faithful, be honest. But if you have a piece of information in the history, be sure you share it. So if you think your dog got into something, be sure you share that information because, and we're a little bit off on the marijuana thing here, but I've walked into the exam room more than once mm-hmm. with a strong suspicion of marijuana. And I've had the client look at me and say, oh no, there's no possibility. And as soon as I step out of the room and the technician goes back in, they say, don't tell Dr. Greer. And they're like, well, newsflash, she already thinks it. So you might as well share the information. So
spit it out. Anything- I don't know how to tell you this. I live in Oregon. The pot farm is next door. Okay. It's not weird here. It's just,
well, it's not legal here, but when I was in Oregon, I smelled a lot less of it than I smelled on the bus at the airport on the way back to my car. So, you know, I'm just saying it happens everywhere. So, you know, be honest, but be careful. Like, think about what your dog's exposed to. I had two dogs today that out of the three dogs in the household, two of them have elevated liver enzymes and they're both eating a commercial diet, but the dog that's eating the homemade diet does not have high liver enzymes. And I'm like, huh. Like, what is fitting this all together? So these are not always easy things to figure out. You may think that it is, but it's not. And so, you know, it's okay to Google some things before you go to the vet, but don't pretend that Dr. Google is smarter than your veterinarian because it may give some suggestions, but yeah. So try to avoid that kind of trap that you fall into. Well, Google said, oh yeah, your vet doesn't want to hear that.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you have a question, instead of asking Dr. Google, you can just email us.
Yes.
Shoot us an email. Go to the website. Shoot us an email. We will be happy to answer, or go to the Facebook page or go to the YouTube channel. We will be happy to answer your question like this one live and on air.
The best we can.
The best we can.
With the zebras. There's some things that are pretty clear, and then there's the zebras.
There are zebras. I say this because Marty made a zebra diagnosis for me a million years ago over the phone. So,
oh dear.
Facts are facts. So there you go. All right. Well, Marty, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I know you are super busy and have a C-section to get to, so I am going to let you go. As always, you guys, don't forget, give us a like and a follow, maybe a review, maybe share with
your friends. And share with all your friends.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks a lot, Marty. Have a great night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.